The Federal Reserve meets today.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Glad you're with us for the morning open, a time we take a look at the economy just as markets are getting started for the day. The Fed has some choices to make about interest rates. Plus, the airlines may be winging it through the holidays. 2010 may not show much lift either. All that coming up. First, where's Wall Street? Markets are lower right now here stateside. The S&P down about 0.4%, the NASDAQ off about 0.5%, and the Dow down now 37 points at 10,464. European shares are lower as well. We're talking somewhere between 0.5% and 1%, and Asian markets closed mostly down today as well. The producer price index, the PPI, was up 1.8%, nearly double what was expected. We're going to get some analysis of that and some other numbers coming out. Julie Nieman is analyst at Smith Moore & Company. She's with us live this morning from St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Steve.
So should we be considered or concerned about rising inflation with that PPI number?
Oh, this is phantom inflation. You know, bottom line, it's due to energy, and it's rising because the dollar is falling. The price of oil is denominated in dollars. Now, if we had real demand for energy, that would be different. We're not using anymore. That would stimulate inflation. But this is phantom inflation.
And should we be concerned about a weaker dollar, though?
Well, you know, the Fed basically is going into a private mode. They're not saying much because they don't want to hammer the dollar either. And they don't want, the markets are really volatile around the holidays. They don't want to see the Treasury market crashing. What they will do today, though, is make sympathetic clucking noises about improving economic outlook just to show that they're on top of things. But conditions are still really bad. They're talking jobless recovery. No, there's effectively no real recovery here. We're looking at gross domestic product probably being up about 4% in the fourth quarter, but that's just inventory restocking, and that can evaporate right away. So we're looking for a steady stream of less bad news, and that doesn't warrant the Fed hiking interest rates in response.
Let's talk a little bit about this exiting of TARP. Wells Fargo becoming the last of the banks to pay back TARP. The message seems to be that the big banks are healthy, right?
Well, the big banks really don't need TARP because they've got too big to fail. Basically, the government said they would underwrite them, and they can borrow at 0% interest rates from the government. So the worst is over for the big banks. They really don't need TARP.
All right. So why aren't they lending then?
Well, the key thing is bank capital still isn't sufficient to cover more bad loan boomerangs coming. They've got more bad loans coming in real estate, adjustable mortgage resets, credit card debt, all kinds of things are coming back at them. And then they basically have no really good deals out there either. They can borrow from the government at 0%, buy 10-year treasuries at 3.5%, so there's no reason to lend to anybody.
All right. Julie Nieman from St. Louis. Julie, we do appreciate it.
You bet.
Thanks so much. The International Air Transport Association is reporting today that the industry is on track to lose $5.6 billion next year. That's about half as much as it'll lose this year. Now, we could use all the airplane phrases to talk about the state of the airline industry. The business is still pretty turbulent. There's a lot of headwind slowing things down. Bottom line, there are a few more miles to go before it returns to profitability. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson is with us live right now from our New York Bureau with the latest on that. Good morning, Jeremy.
Morning, Steve.
So what else does this report say?
Well, it says the worst is likely in the rearview mirror, or using an airline phrase, I was thinking maybe the worst has been left behind, like the iPod in the seat pocket in front of you.
Oh, my.
Not a very good one. But anyway, even as demand rebounds, the industry is concerned about rising fuel prices going forward, which may offset any boost in ticket prices. And I spoke with the spokesman for the Transport Association, Steve Lott. He says making matters worse, there are a lot of new aircraft on the way next year, and airlines already have too many available seats.
We expect over 1,000 aircraft to be delivered in 2010. You know, these are planes that have been ordered years ago. And as a result, it's going to be extremely difficult for airlines to keep capacity growth down.
And he says that means ticket prices may have to stay low so that airlines can fill up these new planes. And that may be good news for you and me, Steve, but not necessarily for the industry.
Now, you're talking about the passenger side of things, Jeremy. What about cargo? FedEx is saying today is going to be the busiest day of the year for them, right?
Yeah, well, the report says that total freight volume is still going to be about 10% below the peak that we hit in 2007, but cargo in general is supposed to grow by 7% worldwide next year.
All right, Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson in New York. Jeremy, thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Tuesday, December 15th, 2009 at marketplace.org. New York Governor David Paterson said this week he's withholding $750 million in payments to schools and local governments there. That's because the state legislature couldn't come up with enough cuts to solve the Empire State's budget shortfall. And as Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports, New York is not alone.
New York isn't the only one on an austerity program. States have been looking all over for places to cut their budgets.
Health and Human Services, programs to vulnerable populations, certainly some education funding, a lot of higher ed cuts in the last legislative session.
Sue Uran is managing director of the Pew Center on the States. She says it'll probably get even worse next year because last year states had lots of stimulus money to help make up the difference. John Shore works on the state fiscal project at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. It's a think tank. He says it usually takes states longer to recover. Their revenue doesn't go back up until people start getting jobs again, and states have more expenses during a recession.
In the time of recession, public needs rise, and the ability of states to meet those needs declines. So the gap between needs and resources is continuing to grow.
Both Shore and Uran say it could be years before revenues get back to pre-recession levels, something that could have long-term consequences. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
The first of the year, the estate tax, the federal tax, will disappear, only to reappear in 2011 if Congress does nothing. Now, that's due to the way the Bush administration's tax cuts were written. But today, a group of some of America's wealthiest people will argue the tax shouldn't expire. From Washington, Brett Neely has more.
The House has already voted to extend the estate tax through next year and beyond. It will apply to estates larger than $3.5 million. Now it's the turn of the Senate, which is occupied with health care. Members of the Gates and Rockefeller family say the tax is essential to preventing an aristocracy, says Lee Ferris. She's an organizer with the group United for a Fair Economy that's working with the families.
Our country is founded on being a meritocracy where you have to get ahead on your own merit.
In the big picture, the estate tax is pretty small. Fewer than 1 in 400 families ever pay it, according to the Tax Policy Center. And it will raise about $14 billion this year, compared to over $800 billion from the income tax. The center's William Gale says the Senate will probably continue the estate tax.
They don't have the guts to raise the tax, and they can't afford to reduce the tax.
Gale adds that if the tax does go away for a year, 2010 could be a very good year for wealthy people to die. In Washington, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
Among the many innovations that helped fuel the financial crisis was the credit default swap, a bit like an insurance policy that pays out when a company or a government agency defaults on its debt. The owner of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange is scheduled to launch a new service today aimed at making that business more transparent. Here's Marketplace's Amy Scott.
CME Group is launching a clearinghouse for credit default swaps. It'll act as a go-between, making sure both buyer and seller hold up their ends of the deal. Exposure to credit default swaps nearly wiped out insurance giant AIG last fall. Michael Greenberger is a former regulator, now with the University of Maryland.
If AIG had to clear its products, there would have been a regular accounting of where they stood vis-a-vis the riskiness of the guarantees they were making.
And AIG might not have required an $85 billion taxpayer rescue last September. On Friday, the House of Representatives passed a bill requiring that many derivative transactions go through a clearinghouse. Securities law professor Lynn Stout of UCLA says it's a step in the right direction.
If you're going to let people gamble, at least make sure they can pay off their gambling debts.
But Stout says loopholes in the bill may limit its effectiveness.
There's tremendous potential there for the industry to essentially appear to be reforming itself without actually reforming itself.
Chicago won't be the only game in town. The Atlanta-based Intercontinental Exchange also clears credit default swaps. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
UN Climate Change Summit continues today in Copenhagen. Marketplace is there with reporters covering those meetings. In the insurance business, a changing environment means changing risk. Over at one of the world's largest reinsurers, they're looking at how that can affect areas and properties it covers. David Bresch is head of sustainability and emerging risk at the Swiss reinsurance company, Swiss Re. He joins us right now. Hi, David.
Morning.
I'm curious why an insurance company would be interested in addressing climate change.
Climate change being probably the key risk of this century, definitely we have to figure out what are the consequences of a changing environment, a changing climate on our existing risks, the risks in our books, and where can we provide solutions to societies in order to better cope with a changing risk landscape.
So what are you doing to address these issues?
Basically make sure we do understand the risks we are underwriting, and understanding the risks that not only mean looking back in a mirror, but it definitely means also envisaging the future, and especially through simulation techniques, making sure we understand the different possible futures we have to face, and we make sure we put them into our considerations.
Now, you looked at 8 locations, including right here in the United States, in Florida. So give me some examples of what you found in the state of Florida.
Basically, we said if we'd like to help societies develop in a resilient way, then we need to understand what does a changing climate mean to local communities. And namely, the one for Florida shows us that 40% of the loss projected by 2030 can be avoided by cost-effective measures. For example, if greenery is well maintained and kept, reducing flying debris, so to speak, that has a positive impact, or reduces losses in case of a large tropical cyclone event. And then in addition, definitely when it comes to the insurance side of the balance sheet, then it's making sure that the pricing of these covers is risk adequate.
So is the pricing risk adequate?
The point is, regarding climate change, this has to be looked at very carefully. And indeed, in some areas, we are of the opinion that the pricing is not sustainable. And it will take quite some time for communities to properly understand the risk landscape in order to come up with a strategy to foster resilient development.
Well, David Bresch, head of sustainability and emerging risk management over at Swiss Re, we do thank you for being with us today.
It's been a pleasure.
The UN Climate Change Summit continues today in Copenhagen Marketplace, there with reporters covering those meetings. After yesterday's protest by some members of an African delegation, the talks are back on. And as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports, there are signs this morning of progress.
There is a glimmer of hope from a draft text on a critical issue, deforestation. The text suggests that negotiators have endorsed a plan to curb the destruction of the rainforests. It involves big financial incentives. Peter Goldmark is with the Environmental Defence Fund. He says we could be on the brink of a breakthrough.
Any path to avoid frying this planet requires us to start limiting and stopping deforestation now. So that's a marvelous near achievement.
But he concedes that one of the most contentious issues here remains unresolved, the question of compliance. It may be many months before there's agreement on how to verify and enforce the commitments made at this summit. In Copenhagen, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And be sure to check out Marketplace with Kai Rizdahl later today as we continue with coverage from the Copenhagen summit. From climate change to spare change, a Salvation Army bell ringer collecting money at a shopping center in Connecticut got a surprise. A rare 1881 half-eagle gold coin was dropped into the tilly. The rare piece is the size of a nickel, but could be worth hundreds of dollars. Officials knew they had something special when the coin wouldn't go through the change counting machine. Hey, check us out online at marketplace.org. Share your thoughts with us there at our website. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI?
I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do
the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's a speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.